a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Seen the sky so blue, the birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, 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 hey. It's a sunny day. Sunny day now. My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, 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 hey. It's just a sunny day. Hey, 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 it's a sunny day. It's just a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. We are taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Ton, this week you've put together another video for us, this one on a peach orchard. And you wanted to take a few minutes this morning and talk about how to plan and maintain an orchard to make sure that, you know, you get really quality fruit. So start out. How do you, first of all, plan?
Well, you want to know why you're growing an orchard. You know, people are like, oh, I'm going to plant a tree and it's going to give me shade and fruit. Not realizing, especially
that's
if it's
my
like
thinking,
a,
for
you
sure.
know, a cherry or a peach, those trees will be dead in 10 or 15 years if you don't maintain them. So you really need to know what you're doing. Are you going to preserve it? You just want some fresh fruit to eat. And so, you know, if you just want a, you know, like a half bushel of fresh peaches, just go buy them. It's going to be far easier and cheaper, especially when you can support local vendors that pick those trees ripe right off the tree instead of having them shipped out of California or the Southeast where the big peach regions are. So, you know why you're going to grow them and know that it's going to be a commitment, almost like you would have a commitment to a swimming pool or a puppy. You know, mm-hmm. just there's that maintenance you have to do.
And so, pruning is quite a commitment.
It is. Pruning is a big commitment. And it's not that it's, you know, all year long. The major pruning takes place in late winter to early spring. But you are probably going to want to study up on how to do it. And there's lots of places this time of year that you can do virtual or sometimes in-person pruning demonstrations to learn how to do that. Another critical factor is spacing. You know, if you've got an area of your yard that you've got this, you know, this nice 10-foot wide strip, and you think, oh, this would be great for fruit trees, most likely not. You need a good 15-foot wide to maybe 20-feet wide area so that that tree can grow. 90% of the fruit trees you find at garden centers are what you'd call semi-dwarf, to where they'll grow anywhere from 20 to 25 feet high and wide, especially if you don't prune them. So you've got to have that kind of space. And then the other thing you need to be willing to do is spray.
And that's the biggest one for me.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that said, well, I tried fruit trees and I got sick of having to maintain that schedule.
Yeah, worms in your cherries.
Yeah. And so that's another reason I encourage people to buy fruit from local vendors, because they do all the work. And for what you can buy the fruit for, it's just going to be, if you just want stuff to eat, it's going to be far cheaper to just buy it locally.
But we like to know where our food came from.
We do. And so if you can buy cherries that were grown in Box Elder County or down in the San Quentin Payson area that are our big fruit regions, there's some cherry growers up in Davis County still also. You know, you do know where it came from. And so on that spraying topic, I want to, you know, organic doesn't mean that
you read my mind,
walk away from spraying altogether.
Right.
People that say, oh, I'm organic and I don't spray, have no clue what organics are. And there's just these assumptions that, oh, it's healthier. Look at me. I'm eating organic. But organic involves fewer sprays, but they're especially in fruit production for, you know, cherries, apples, peaches, is spraying involved. It's just that these sprays are derived from natural sources and go through a vetting process to be called organic. So they're most likely going to be, I won't call them safer, but there's some reduced risk there, and they don't usually stay on the fruit as long. Mm-hmm. So that's more what organics are, but you can definitely maintain your fruit organically. There's lots of options out there for fertilizers and sprays that will keep your fruit mostly pest-free that are organic, but you still are maintaining a schedule of spraying.
Right. So you put together a video, a peach orchard video. Tell us what people will find in that video when they go to the Greenhouse Facebook page.
What they will find is just a quick, not really even a tour of a peach orchard, but I was down in Spring Lake, which is between Payson and Santaquin, and yeah, I just wanted to point out some of the things that the orchardist is doing to ensure that he gets good fruit. So the trees are up, you know, not people, it's not like people can just go build on the side of a hill, but the reason the peach orchard is there is due to the weather, that it's going to be warmer there in the winter, most likely, because cold air sinks, and looking at the spacing in the trees and a little bit about pruning.
All right. So you can see all of that on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. Our next caller does want to talk about fruit trees and soil preparation. So let's take that call now. Kent is in Holiday. Good morning, Kent. How can we help you this morning?
I kind of hesitate to ask this question after your prior conversation.
Go ahead, Kent.
But I've had blue spruce in my backyard for 25 years. I just cut down, and I want to plant Some dwarf fruit trees in their spot. Is there any special soil preparation or caution planting fruit trees where blue spruce have been for a long time? No, there's those pine needles.
A lot of the spruce pine needles and pine needles, people like, oh, they're toxic or whatever, but they're organic matter. They take longer for soil microorganisms to break down, but that soil is probably going to be pretty good. And so I, as long as you've cut the spruce down, I would go ahead and plant.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Kent. Thanks for your call this morning. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Back after a short break.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Last week, Ton, we talked a bit about parsnips and growing those. The texter would like to know more about that. Can you talk about growing parsnips? What is the best garden soil or grow box? Or what is the best way to grow parsnips successfully?
Just don't.
No, just because you don't like parsnips.
Well,
they're hard to grow, though. Sheridan did address that they are more difficult to grow.
Yeah, the soil temperatures need to, when you seed them, need to be about 55 to 65 degrees for ideal germination. So if you have an inexpensive kitchen thermometer, what I like to do is just stick it into the soil and see what the temperature is. The other problem you run into is they really don't like temperatures over 75. And so you've got that window of time from early spring into early summer. And as soon as we start getting, 75 to 80 degrees, they can really get an off flavor to them if you leave them in all summer. So the other problem with them, there's a few, is that they take a long time to germinate. So 2 to 3 weeks. And the seeds are as small as carrot seeds and they need to be kept wet during that entire period of time, not muddy wet, but moist so that they don't dry out because they're so small.
Okay. I know you said don't grow them, but is it worth it? I mean, once you do get them going, do they produce enough to make it worth it?
My dad used to grow parsnips and he grew them for a few years and we got lots of them. Mm-hmm. So it is doable. And once you kind of figure out the techniques and, use some trial and error, it's not that it's going to be a hugely difficult thing. It's just attention to detail. But for me, the parsnips just have, this is just me, so I'm not criticizing in there for the, how much I don't really like them. No, they're not worth it to grow for me.
Even though your dad grew them, Ton.
It was one of those things, there's kids starving somewhere and you're going to eat these, And mm-hmm. So, we would, if they're in soups and different things, I've had parsnips that have been pureed into potatoes and things, and they're not bad. It's not that they're horrible, but if I have a limited garden area and I can only grow a few crops, parsnips are not on my list.
All right. So if the devil is in the details, where could this person really look up a fact sheet and get the best
USU
information?
USU has one that is really thorough. If they Google USU and parsnips in the garden, the first couple of hits will be a PDF fact sheet that's free that they can download.
Okay, let's go to our next caller. Glenn is in Highland. Good morning, Glenn. How can we help you this morning?
Hi. I'll ask the question and then I'll listen for the answer. I live in Highland, and we have maple trees, and it seems like the whole neighborhood is losing maple trees. And I have one that it looks like the leaves come out, they're dry or they're brown, and half of the tree is doesn't produce good leaves or very few. The other half produces good leaves. I was going to cut it down, but the branches are real pliable and all that, so I decided not to. So I'll listen for your answer. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm assuming here that the trees are probably Norway maple, maybe Autumn Blaze. Norway maple has several cultivars, and so you rarely see a tree sold as Norway maple, but they would be things like Crimson King, Emerald Queen, Parkway, Colander. There's lots of them out there, but the Norway maples are infamous locally. After being in the ground for about 10 to 15 years, they start to get diseases in them, and that those things you're describing, to where half the tree is leafed out and the other half is bare, yellow leaves. It's just very classic for Norway maple. It's one of those trees that's super pretty, but I just would never plant in my yard because of those problems. It gets big and nice, and then it starts to decline. So there's those problems. And then the other one that you're probably seeing is iron chlorosis. There are many maples that don't do well here because they can't get enough iron out of the soil. There's also a number of maples that do just fine. But the East Coast, Autumn Blaze, Sugar Maple, Silver Maple, Red Maple mix that has been sold for a long time, and they're becoming less common, at least the other trees, not Autumn Blaze, have been problematic in most Utah soils. So there's just lots of problems with the most popular maples we plant. And so if you need a big maple, I would veer towards what's called sycamore maple. If you want some smaller trees, Queen Elizabeth, Acer Miabia. I can always remember the Latin name on the State Street
maple.
How do
you remember the Latin name, but not the other
name? When you're in nurseries and just talking to people, so they know exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
Acer Miabia is a species of maple native to Korea and Japan that does well, that's cold hardy, and it is drought hardy. So it's a lot of times you just refer to things by their Latin names mm-hmm. so that people know exactly what you're talking about. But there's lots of problems with some of the maples we try to grow.
Let's take our next caller. That is Mont in Bluffdale. Good morning, Mont.
How you doing?
Doing well, thank you. How about you?
Good. Hey, I want to rebuttal on those parsnips. last week I called in. And for years, I would grow them, and then I couldn't get them to germinate. Well, I saw a thing on the internet where you take toilet paper rolls, you stand them on their end, fill them full of potting soil, water them down, take a pencil, poke a hole in it, drop two seeds. And last year, I probably got 90% germination on my parsnips. Then I dig a trench, set them on their end about 2 or 3 inches apart, and I'm still eating parsnips.
And the I'm sorry. I'm just kidding, but go ahead.
I'm telling you, my grandkids will eat them.
All right. I'm glad that you called and reminded us of, that's a really ingenious way to grow them.
There are some tips and tricks to growing things. I've seen people get the hydrogel that was popular for a while for trying to increase the water holding capacity of soil. It actually doesn't really work well, but they would put carrot and parsnip seeds in hydrogel that was hydrated and then squirt it out of a Ziploc bag that just had the end cut off, almost like you were doing a cake, and they would squirt it in the row, and that hydrogel stayed wet enough that they got really good germination. So that's one. I've seen people get 2x4s and water in the seed row and then put a 2x4 over the top. And then every few days, they'll just fold the 2x4 over, re-wet the soil and put it back. And when they see a few parsnips or carrots coming up, then they just take the 2x4s off. There's ways to get really good germination. I think more of the point was that it takes a long time. And if you let those dry out just once, you're had, especially later on if they have started to germinate but haven't popped up above the soil. And so my comments on parsnips, I am joking. I can eat them if I need to. They're not my favorite, but I'm not also discouraging anybody that does like them to eat them.
You just want them to know what they're getting into.
Yes, I do.
All right. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. The next texter, Ton, lives in a 55 and older community where they have just a little bit of area around their patio. And I'm not sure that you can answer their question totally. They want some advice about what they could be able to grow in this area. They have like a foot and a half area around the outside of their patio, and they're kind of thinking that they'd like to plant some flowers and maybe a bit of produce. What would be your suggestions for growing in such a small area?
Well, there's lots of things. It's just space is a limitation, so they need to note what they're looking for first. One of the hardest things to do if you work at a garden center is to help people that don't have an idea of what they want.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like they want to do kind of a little bit of a mix, but they're thinking maybe the vegetables will overtake the flowers. So they want to do a little bit of planning there.
So, I mean, on smaller vegetables, there are some really neat peppers out there there's ornamental peppers, but you can also get edible peppers that if you let them ripen completely, get some really colorful fruit, and they're not super huge mm-hmm. as far as the plants. And so they could maybe do some peppers. They could do a multi-use thing to where they started out in mid-March with things like lettuce and radishes and cabbages and green, and then put some pansies in there and other relatively hardy flowers, and then transition more into a summer thing. Now they need to be a little careful on the flowers they put in because they can get big like the vegetables, but you could easily transition that into, if you could find some like patio tomatoes that stay a little smaller, and do some other ornamental flowers. But I would use that area. It's not like you can only plant once. If you want to, you can use it the entire season and actually double or triple your production per square foot on both the flowers and the vegetables by using it from mid-March to late October.
Right. Just make sure they don't plant things that get too large, either flowers or vegetables.
Yes, and if they need help planning out what they want to do with it, right now a lot of garden centers are actually starting to hire. They're really gearing up for spring, but they will have nursery personnel there that have more time to sit down and do a little design. If it's just a really small area and say, here are some options, then trying to go in mid-May to where a lot of times you just won't get help because the nurseries are overwhelmed. So now's a great time to go in and talk to folks. And then if you want something a little more extensive, a lot of the extension offices and nurseries will have people that they can recommend that will come out and do a design for, you know, a lot of times it's fixed $50 to $100 an hour, but it only will take a few hours and it's sometimes well worth doing that too.
Yeah, this is a great time to plan because there are people who can help you and will spend the time and tell you what to order or will, you know, can really help you design something that's going to really work for you. But you're back to the back to your first point though. You have to know what you really want the most before you start that planning process. You can't just go in and say, hey, what can I plant here?
Yeah, I mean, one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen was I used to work up at J&J Nursery. And so I like all the nurseries. I just used to be employed there, so I'm not giving them endorsements over anybody else. But it's a fairly extensive nursery, and they had several hundred Bosnian pines. And there was a couple that would come in starting in April and look at the Bosnian pines, and they would spend an hour or two and start fighting about which one to put in the yard and leave. And they did this probably 10 times over the season and never bought one.
Oh my.
And so if you need to let somebody be the decider, and you need to know what you want. And I kept telling them, you know, over 10 years, even though it's cute now, it's going to change and just turn into a Bosnian pine. And I don't know, you know, whatever, all the dynamics and things, but planning, but also being flexible enough to say, you know, it may not be exact, but it's close and it fits a lot of the parameters. Let's do this. They're just critical.
Yeah. Write down your three top priorities. That's what would be my advice. And then go in and get some help. That number to call 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We'll be back following the news.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.